Welcome back. Final half hour for the week heading into the Memorial Day weekend. And if it's Memorial Day weekend, we're going to talk about Brewers Outlet. Stock up for the weekend now, whether you're hosting people or you're going someplace on the first unofficial weekend of summer. You want to make sure Brewers Outlet is a critical part of the weekend. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers. Water, lots of water. Soft drinks, lots of soft drinks. Snacks. Okay, they roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the personal favorites, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. So while you're listening to Sean Fitz and I talk, why don't you go over to Brewers Outlet, listen on 1070, and listen to the interview as you stock up at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Proud to be in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Routine, which you need. Difficult, which unfortunately from time to time you might need. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. He's one of the best in the business, and he doesn't really do many of these. He does a lot for the On3 network, but he doesn't really do many outside interviews such as this, and that's Sean Fitz from On3.com and Blue White Illustrated. Sean, it's just great to have you with us, and welcome to the show.
Of course. Sorry I missed the call the first time. I was in the phone on the charger watching some golf. Scottie Scheffler hold out number one, and I got excited. So, you know, I just burned a little behind because of it.
Well, that's okay, because Shoffley is 62. Are you kidding me? Wow.
Unbelievable. As you know, Nate Bauer and I are going to play tomorrow morning. And, you know, one of us might get to 62 on the front. So,
yeah.
Can't wait.
Okay, it should be great. Should be pointed out that the owner of the station, Roger Haddon, is a huge Washington Commanders fan. So you are not alone, just so you know.
Tortured Soul Society, yes. That's good to know. I think it's probably a little bit easier to follow now that Dan Snyder's out, but I grew up with it. I'm trying to afflict my kids with it as well. It hasn't taken to them yet, but we'll get there at some point.
A busy weekend coming up because Penn State's going to get some top guys coming in, but then the series of official visits kicks into high gear starting the weekend of the 31st. So where do things stand right now with the official visits and guys coming in to see Penn State?
Yeah, they're very big right now. I mean, that's kind of, we've just been playing the waiting game for almost 2 months now. It just seems like we just kind of we're going to get to the end of May. We're going to get to June. We're going to get there, and then things are going to happen. Penn State's class about halfway full right now, but you're going to look at the next couple months as pivotal in terms of filling up, because if you look at how Penn State has typically done their recruiting, they're, for the most part, they lock up shop by the time the season rolls around. I think part of that's by design. Part of that's just the calendar and how it's worked out with these official visits. But they're going to start this weekend. Yose Epinesa, the younger brother of AJ Epinesa, who played at Iowa, was a fantastic player for the Hawkeyes with the Bills right now. He's going to come in as more of a victim of circumstance there with his calendar. He's got four official visits scheduled in June, so he'll be in this weekend. And then it's every weekend from there on out, May 31st, June 7th, June 14th, June 21st, and then the dead period comes in. That's when they kick into overtime. That's when they kick into camp season. I think that's when, you know, this class can sort of catch its stride. It's been all over the place, very early commitments in some spots. They've got 9 commitments on the offensive side of the ball right now, 4 on defense. So you can bet that defensive staff is probably going to catch up some here in the next 6 weeks.
Now, on the offensive side, Danny O'Brien and Andy Koltunicki have gone out. They've looked at a lot of quarterbacks themselves individually, haven't they?
Yes, they've been out on the road. Of course, Danny replacing Jaywan Sider on the road as Jaywan works his way back from an off-season injury that we don't talk about. But yeah, Danny's been out. Andy's been out. It's been mostly forward focused. 2026. They've got a commitment from Beckham Kritzen. 2025. Missed out on Matt Zollers in state in 2025. So still trying to poke around there. He committed to Missouri in the spring. So they're still trying to keep an eye on him in state. But for the most part, they seem pretty content with Beckham Kritzen, who's now at Miami Central in Florida.
All right. Now, the early signing period, as we know, has been moved up in December. When you look at the early signing period, and I take this from a basketball point of view, they've been doing theirs the second Wednesday of November now for decades, and it's worked out fine. Where should they put the early signing period, in your opinion, as somebody who follows it as closely as you do?
I really like the end of July. Obviously, everyone's getting ready for their season. So it's not just the college coaches that are doing it. It's the kids that are doing it. And by and large, when you follow and cover Penn State, most of the kids who are in early, they stay with Penn State. I don't know if it's just a personality thing or just how the two sides sort of mesh together. But Penn State, the way that they had one decommitment last cycle. I think they've had two this cycle in the 2025 early. But, considering what that's up against nationally, Penn State's got a pretty good retention rate in terms of their guys. So I think it would probably benefit Penn State a lot if they had a signing period at the end of July. And the issue there is, and the same thing happened with, when they started in December, is if you don't sign in July, what's that do? Like, if you feel that, and I know there's verbiage for coaching changes and things like that, but if you feel like you're not completely locked in and you want to go see a game at Alabama, you want to go see a game at Georgia or whatever like that, and they're still recruiting you, how does that happen? It hasn't been a big issue in December because every side has adjusted, but it's just something to put in the back of the mind. But I think from a Penn State perspective and from a high school athlete perspective, getting all that out of the way, not having to worry about injuries, not having to worry about any of that other stuff, I think that end of July probably makes a lot of sense. Now, the flip side there is, does it really matter that much anymore? Because you can arrive in January and you can hit the portal in April. It's not a situation where you are completely bound to anything really anymore. So that letter of intent, yes, it means something, but it's not quite the binding agreement that it once was.
And I'm totally with you on the end of July completely, because look, you're right. I think a lot of them want to enjoy their senior season in part and feel like they have that part all settled, and that's why they have the first Wednesday in February if you're not inclined to make up your mind. So I'm completely with you on that. The settlement with House, we don't know how it's going to play out in the end, but it sounds like the negotiations are 22% of your revenue or $20 million, whichever one is lower. And can this go a long way towards settling that recruiting part down a bit and having guys making commitments?
I think so. It gives everybody a baseline. And I think you talked about it before, the Big Ten, the SEC are going to be out ahead of everything. Like, this is where the sport has headed. And, as the conferences get bigger, that sort of makes more sense. But it gives everybody a baseline to work with. And it takes it just takes everything off of the fans that are being asked to foot the bill. And I think that's the crazy thing is, you look at this system, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, you're asking donors and everything to write these checks and everything like that. That's a tough ask, because you're asking them for facilities, you're asking them for scholarship dollars, you're asking them for all these different things. And I don't think anybody likes the system. It's about who's making the most of the system. And right now, it's been a struggle for Penn State to sort of get the bigger fish across the line, get the things, I wouldn't call it luxury spending, but to keep up with the Ohio States, to keep up with the Alabamas, and actually Alabama's probably a bad example, but to keep up with some of these programs that are able to, pull in these big chunks, I think that's really what you're looking at right now. And if everybody's got a starting point, and yes, everyone has the same starting point now, which is zero, but a nice little buffer would go a long way for a lot of programs. And also, I think it would take out that I'll just call it pay for play because we're here.
Sure.
But you take out some of the negotiating power. You take away the ability for some of these recruitments to get out of hand, I think. And you know, I think that Penn State has done a really good job sticking to their guns. I mean, some of that is necessary because of the budget they have, but some of it is, hey, we're not going to go crazy and buy transfers, not going to go crazy and pay a high school kid who hasn't played it down to college football an exorbitant amount of money. And yes, that's going to lose you some recruits, but at the same time, it's also going to help you out on the back end because you're a developmental program. You're a program that's done really, really well in the NFL draft, and people see that. So a long-winded answer to a short question, yes, I think that's something that could really help Penn State.
I mean, look, I know the NIL dollars are out there. Everybody knows it. Well, I was at Ohio State for basketball the weekend Downs committed from Alabama to Ohio State, and I was told indirectly what the number was. It wasn't small. When you talk to recruits, Sean, how often is NIL brought up with the people you talk with?
You know, it's probably less than people think, but yeah. Then again, you spend most of that recruitment, it's doing visits, doing everything that everyone did 5-10 years ago, and that's fine, but NIL has become the chip, the bargaining chip at the end. So you could have great relationships, you could have a kid on campus 10 times, that's all great, but at the end of the day, if you go in there at the end of that recruitment and somebody comes in and swoops in with a big bag of money, what do you do? I mean, that's the big thing that I'm looking at, and that's kind of what's made it a little bit more difficult to cover is, hey, Penn State can do everything right with a kid. But at the end of the day, if that bag is bigger somewhere else, that can make a difference. And I think I see it more as a tiebreaker, really. It can be, like, a lot of the old things, like people say this is killing the sport and everything like that, a lot of the old things is still a prevalent part of college football. A lot of these old things are still sticking around. A lot of the culture is still sticking around, but, you know, you're just going about it a different way. But that tiebreaker, if somebody's throwing you a bag, if somebody is making it impossible to say no, because this is life-changing money to a lot of these guys that have never touched it and their families have never touched it, and I'm a proponent of athletes getting what they can get, but if that tiebreaker comes through and it's not on your end, that's going to be tough to stomach. And then what do? You go back to your donors and you say, this is why we lost and all this stuff. And it's just a big cycle of, I don't even know the word that I would go with it, but it's just a big cycle of disappointment and then trying to turn that into dollars, and just that wheel just keeps turning.
Part of the wheel turning, of the those who transferred out of Penn State, you know, I think you're not going to be surprised to hear me say I wasn't surprised by the ones that transferred out, except for one, and that was King Mack. He ended up going to Alabama. What was your read on that when you finally, because you're the one that put the story out about it?
Yeah, that was a tough one because, like I said, all these things are still in place from college football, and playing time was there. Opportunity was there. This is a kid that was going to be the fourth safety in a three safety look. So,
yep.
Guy gets a stinger. Guy has to come out for a while. That's a great opportunity in a defense that you seemingly know. So, like from a football perspective, it's a tough read. Now, there's a lot that goes into it. This is a kid from South Florida. So, South Florida, the Wild West in terms of recruiting, and you know there's a lot that goes along with that. But I think that was the surprising thing because we had heard whispers in April about him being a potential, I guess you can call him a poaching candidate or something like that. And it's just like, okay, well, maybe he can work through it. Maybe he can get it. And then all of a sudden he hits the portal on the last day. And I agree with you. The other guys that left, no real big surprises in there. I mean, you never know what was going to happen with Keandre, but that's kind of been the story for the last couple of years. So. But yeah, this one was the one that stings because not only do you go into the summer with a huge hole in the back of your in the fourth spot of your second your safety spots, but also like, how does this change recruiting South Florida? How does this change, you know, just going out of the region? Because you know that distance matters and these other things matter to a lot of different people. And I just had a tough time wrapping my head around that one myself because I think he's going to be a really good player and. And if you look at it, at Alabama, sure, I'm sure he's got a simpler opportunity. I don't know the depth chart. I don't know the situation there. But If he has the same opportunity at a defense that he has to relearn, he's got the same opportunity. I mean, just from a football perspective, that one was a head scratcher.
Sean, you know the great respect I have for your work and what you do. What is it about this job that drives you and intrigues you when you're covering something 365?
Man, that's a very good question. And it's like, it's always fun to learn the stories, tell the stories, meet the people, know the people. I mean, I think I've been very lucky. I started covering this in 2006 under Joe Paterno, and then Bill O'Brien came through, and that was a trip. And then James comes in and really brings with him the stability that just doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, a lot of these people, you know, known a lot of these people since he got here. And it's been incredible to be around the people, but from a perspective of covering it, you know, staying ahead of news, breaking news, there's really nothing like it. But the recruiting doesn't get boring to me. I mean, the names change, the stories change somewhat, but, you know, there's always something to talk about. And we're grateful for the people at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com and on three that want to follow it year round. Because this is a year round sport. You get games 4 months a year, but this is a year round sport. So we really appreciate the people that follow us and really appreciate the people that interact. I think that's what keeps us going. It's just the interaction with the community. It's really fun, man. And like I said, when people ask about my job, mm-hmm. I get paid to watch football. It doesn't get much better than that. I work from home. It does not get much better than that. So I love it. I still get up every morning and I get to work. I don't have to work. I get to work. And I think that that's a very big thing, especially with the change to go to On3.
Yeah, and believe me, you're preaching to the choir on that. I get to sit there on Saturdays with Jack Hammond and talk about football. Wow, pretty good.
Unbelievable.
Pretty good life. Hey, one final one I want to bring up, and it actually circles back to the King Mac discussion. You talked about South Florida. Pennsylvania goes in cycles. So the old days of putting the protractor down and drawing a 500-mile circle around State College, you have to go where the talent is. So how, you know, what kind of process is that for this staff to go distances to get guys and convince them that Penn State is the one?
It all starts with that recruiting staff. Now you obviously know the assistants. Terry Smith does a wonderful job. Jaywon Sider, you know, down in South Florida does a wonderful job. But Andy Frank, Kenny Sanders, Alan Samitis, Chris Mann, just the guys that do the heavy lifting that you don't see are what put Penn State in that position to not only identify, because it's one of the best staffs at identifying talent nationally, but not only identify, but forge those relationships for essentially the closers. And James Franklin was a really good recruiting head coach to come in and do. So this is a top-to-bottom staff effort. And those guys on the recruiting staff, man, I know Kenny Sanders just had twins about a year ago. Yep. I cannot imagine the hours that those guys work, and on top of that, having twins. Oh boy! So yeah, it's about the work and it's about the effort that those guys put in.
Sean, great, great respect for the work you do, and really appreciate the time you gave us today, because most of the year is so busy for you, and I'm glad you could carve out a couple of minutes for us today.
And I'm glad I did not fall asleep on the chair watching golf. So I appreciate the wake-up call, and we'll talk to you soon. Steve, thanks for having me on.
John, thanks so much. Sean Fitz on 3.com, Blue White Illustrated, always doing outstanding work. And it's great to have him on the show. All right, big race weekend coming up. As you know, Kevin Herr, a.k.a. The Soup, but Kevin loves the Indy 500. I love watching the Indy 500. That will be Sunday to get things rolling. I think the pre-race is at 11, then they get the race itself going just after noon. Then the Coca-Cola 600 takes place from Charlotte. You know, people don't realize the Indy 500 started in 1911. Well, the World 600, the Coca-Cola 600, actually started in 1960. And then starting in 74, both races occurred on the same day. So just a little history of it, because Sunday is race day in America. Looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. I'll watch both. I'll put my feet up and watch both. Big Memorial Day weekend. I want you to enjoy yourself. Be safe. Have fun. Enjoy friends. Enjoy family. By the way, Brewers Outlet right there for you. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. They have it all, from water to soft drinks to wine coolers to beer, snacks, peanuts, everything. And, of course, it's always great to be in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Fun News Radio, 1070 WKOK. Okay.